This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
There was an idea, the Avengers Initiative.
I can do this all day.
Dormammu!
I'm a superhero.
I come to bargain.
I love you 3,000.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry.
You should have gone for the head.
And I...
Wakanda forever!
Why is Gamora?
Iron Man. We are...
Hello, welcome to a brand new episode of Den of Geek Presents Marvel Standum, where we try to give you the deepest possible dives on all the goings-on in the MCU, Marvel Comics, and beyond. I'm your host, Den of Geek News and Features Editor Kirsten Howard, and joining me today are Den of Geek TV Editor Alec Bajalad, and Den of Geek Contributor and terrific pop culture writer, Dr. Mr. Joe George. This episode of Marvel Standum is powered by eBay. We'll be talking more about that soon. But first, we're going to be chatting about the recently released version of Marvel's special presentation, Werewolf by Night, now in color. Alec, Joe, I think we all enjoyed the black and white version of Werewolf by Night this time last year. What did you think about this color version?
I liked it. I don't know how necessary this was to re-release it in color, but I will say, like, it's nice to see Marvel still care and invest in something a year after its release. So many of the Marvel efforts recently feel fairly, what's the word? Temporary.
Bad?
Yeah, bad. Bad, but temporary. Like, you know, they're just churning these things out at this point with it's seemingly little care. It's nice to actually have them like revisit something. Like, I don't know if it was necessary to create a colored version of Werewolf by Night. It looks fine. It's an interesting update, but I just kind of admire the TLC put into it more than anything else. I'm just glad to see that they still remember these things exist, even like a year after they're out. And it was nice just to revisit Werewolf by Night, which remains pretty great. I still think it's excellent.
Yeah, it is still excellent. I don't think the color version's better. I think it's slightly. I'm never going to go back to the color version. It's going to be the black and white version from here on out, which kind of bums me to say, because color is a real issue in superhero movies and live action adaptations in general, and especially Marvel. It's one of the things that really bums me out as somebody who loves the comics too, that they're going from this colorful, visually striking medium, and so often it gets translated into concrete goop, you know? And so I appreciate the fact that they're going in and paying attention to color. And I think the first third looks really great, but as soon as they get outside into the labyrinth and the lights go down a little bit more, it becomes really goopy. And not only am I a comic book fan, but I'm also a horror fan, which means I have strong feelings about what blood looks like on screen. And the blood looked terrible. I wish that I'm saying too much, but we could, if you care, we could talk more about this later. But I wish, in the same way that the black and white version felt like it was pulling from Universal horror of the 30s and 40s, I wish that the colorized version kind of had a little bit more maybe of like early Hammer movies, you know, that sort of Technicolor, like the blood would look like almost pink in how bright it is. You know, I wish it had, the coloring had a little bit more character to it. It felt a little bit haphazard and unnecessary.
I'm probably going to be the outlier again, because I really enjoyed the black and white version of Werewolf by Night. I really, really liked it. And when they said they were putting out a color version, I was like, well, that defeats the object. Like, it was really good. why would we need the color version? I mean, I'm sure that's nice for people who just don't want to watch anything in black and white, maybe, or but why do this? And what happened was that I think I was more involved in the story because the black and white was maybe a layer of gimmickry that I hadn't really accepted when I was watching it the first time. So I was more involved in this, in the story, watching it in color, and except for one moment, which we'll get to later. But I think that's what it was like. Maybe the colors didn't look, like you said, Joe, as great, like as good as they could. They were saturated, but perhaps they didn't look as cool as they could have. But what the visuals did remind me of is the Blade movies. I think that's what it was when I was watching this. I was like, I could be watching some kind of Blade spin-off right now. And, you know, it felt like it was part of that universe visually in some way that I can't quite explain. But do either of you, well, Alec, I'm not sure if you've seen the Blade movies. No. Joe, do you know what I mean by that? Or
no, you're talking crazy talk. I mean, maybe it looks like Blade Trinity without all of that annoying Ryan Reynolds jokes. But no, I mean, the first Blade opens with blood pouring from the ceiling. And there's nothing. I feel so bad. I really like Werewolf by Night. I think it's incredibly well directed. I think the pacing is great. I don't mean to dog on it. I think it's amazing. But if we're going to talk specifically about the color, there's nothing color-wise that's on the level of the first Blade movie, which Stephen Norrington's not the greatest director in the world, but he directs the heck out of that movie. And certainly nothing like, there's no use of contrast in the color version in the same way there is in even Blade 2. You know, the fight that you get, it looks goofy because of the CG, but the fight that happens behind the big set of lights in Blade 2, you know, that's an excellent use of contrast. Or the scene where Blade falls into the pit of blood after Ron Perlman shoots him. And then, you know, he gets up and it's all dripping down. Like, they're using the color so well in those scenes. And again, it's Guillermo del Toro directing that, the second one. So of course it's going to look amazing, even if Blade 2 is still slightly better. But I can't go with you there. No, I feel like it's too sludgy.
I do agree that I don't think, you know, they made this with the emphasis on the color. You know, they did the best they could perhaps with putting out the color version. But I don't know. There was something, I do think the contrast and the saturation and stuff worked pretty well. The darks were really dark. I noticed they were really black. You know, and that there was an attention to detail there that I enjoyed. And I did think, like, if there was a modern Blade, perhaps the more generic scenes would look like this. You know, not the set pieces, not the visual stuff that you would do for a colorized version of one of these monster movies. But if the more talky stuff, perhaps it would fit into that world. Okay. But that's okay. No one has to agree with me. That's fine. A year on from watching this, because we already did like it. I know, Joe, you had a few problems with it, but a year on from Werewolf by Night, watching it again, is it as good? Has it improved in the year since we've seen it, do you think?
I think it's as good, which is kind of like a minor miracle for me, because with few exceptions, like the classics, like Thor Ragnarok, Winter Soldier, the original Iron Man, I don't usually enjoy rewatching Marvel content. Like, and maybe I'm just not much of a rewatcher to begin with. Like, I kind of just like, once is usually enough for most things. So I would not have rewatched this at all if it hadn't come out in color and we weren't going to talk about it. But I was like pleasantly surprised by how well it holds up. Really helps that it's, you know, under 50 minutes still. Like, it's just like really good economy and storytelling. There's very little fat on it whatsoever, and it remains eminently watchable. Mike used to say that, like, you know, he was gonna rewatch this every Halloween, which sounded so foreign to me. I'm like, yeah, all right, like, there's like The Shining out there, like, you know. But you know, having watched it the second time, I think that's probably valid. Like, I could see this watching at least a couple Halloweens in a row. I wouldn't be upset with that.
I'm thinking about this as we're talking, because I did find it really held up, and there were parts of the story that I was more drawn into. And I don't know if that's because this is my first time rewatching it to specifically talk on, you know, go on camera and talk about it, and therefore I'm paying a little bit more attention. Maybe it is the color, but yeah, it holds up really well. And there's just little things like the bit where Jack starts sniffing Elsa so he remembers her scent. The first time, and most of the times I'd watched that, I had watched it as a joke. You know, this is a really funny gag, especially when she says, "Does this work?" And then he says, "Once." But the second time, it's really sad when he says "once." And while he's doing it, it's really sad. You know, there's, and this might be because I watch a ton of horror movies, especially in October. I've been watching the old Universal Wolfman, and Lon Chaney Jr. sucks as Talbot. He's just a big buffoon. And he cannot sell the sadness of the Wolfman story. And Gael Garcia Bernal, I mean, it's not a hot take to say that he's an excellent actor, but he's so good at being incredibly charming and funny, but also he's really sad in that scene where he's about to turn and he's going to possibly kill this person that he recognizes as a decent person. There's all sorts of stuff with that. There's extra weight with a lot of Laura Donnelly's deliveries, which, again, I thought she was excellent the first time around, but excellent in that sort of edgy, edgy is not the right word, but sardonic sort of way. But again, here she had a little bit more weight, even in those first couple of scenes where she's entering and they're all giving her a hard time. There's a palpable sadness to kind of this. Everybody admires her father, and she knows what a terrible person that he is, and how that's still her father, and she's kind of sad that she's drawn back into the family. It's rich in a way that in the performances, in a way that some Marvel things aren't. And I don't know if I'm noticing that more because of the color. You might be right on that point.
I do think that there was, as much as I really like that black and white one, I felt like when they brought the color into it, there was a warmth. And like you said, Joe, there was a layer of richness to the story that perhaps I hadn't felt before. So I wasn't expecting to come away from this thinking, you know, if I had to watch this again, I'd choose the color version. Like, I wouldn't have thought that in a million years, because I thought the black and white version was so good. But I ended up feeling that way. I mean, outside of that, the score is still absolutely impeccable. Like, in both versions, it works. And that's because Giacchino is a master of the craft, right? But it's also, even the color version and in the black and white one, you can tell it's been lit and staged so well. The shots have been chosen very specifically. There's only one moment in Werewolf by Night, the color version, that didn't quite work for me. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, eBay. eBay is the premier destination for collecting comics, both old and new. Whether it's that highly sought-after iconic comic or an obscure niche that speaks directly to you, odds are you'll certainly find it on eBay. Here's a list of comics that are must-haves for any fan of Jack Russell, Man-Thing, Elsa Bloodstone, or any Marvel horror tale. Marvel Spotlight 2. Most people associate Marvel Comics with superheroes, but before hitting it big with Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko were in the monster comic game. That's the case with the anthology series Marvel Spotlight, which used its second issue to introduce Jack Russell, a scion of a powerful European family cursed with lycanthropy. The creative team doesn't go as hard into horror as some might want, making Russell a tragic figure who unleashes his fur and claws on evildoers more than the innocent. But anyone on the fence about Russell will be won over by the story's closing narration. What could revenge matter? What could it ever matter? To a boy, now a man, now a wolf. Tomb of Dracula 18. Like the Universal monsters that inspired them, it would only be a matter of time before Marvel's Werewolf by Night and Count Dracula crossed paths. The Marvel Wolfman penned Tomb of Dracula series embraced the gothic romance its central character invites, but that didn't prevent it from indulging in good old monster mashes. That's exactly what happened when Jack Russell's search for a cure brought him to Castle Dracula in Transylvania. Thanks to this classic horror-influenced approach, it's easy to draw a straight line from Tomb of Dracula 18 to Michael Giacchino's Universal-inspired direction to the Werewolf by Night special presentation. Legion of Monsters 1. In the opening pages of 2011's Legion of Monsters 1, a murderous beast stalks down a suburban street, heading to the house where a young, oblivious woman dances in her living room alone. But when the beast bursts into her house, the woman doesn't run or shriek. Instead, she looks up at the monster and asks derisively, "Am I meant to scream?" With that scene, writer Dennis Hopeless perfectly introduces readers to Elsa Bloodstone, the wry monster hunter who leads the Legion of Monsters. In addition to Elsa, Legion of Monsters brings together Jack Russell and some of Marvel's finest fiends, including Canantu the Living Mummy, Manphibian, and of course Morbius the Living Vampire. Is Legion of Monsters better than Morbius's big screen debut? I don't want to spoil things for you, but yeah. Yeah, it is. Man-Thing 5. For non-comic book readers, Man-Thing Ted was the breakout character of Werewolf by Night, an affable hulking creature made all the more lovable by sharing scenes with the charming Gael Garcia Bernal. Man-Thing has a long history in the comics, one that involves far more tragedy than the buddy comedy we saw in the special presentation. That complicated approach is on full display in 1974's Man-Thing 5, written by the late, great Steve Gerber. The story finds a depressed former clown coming to Man-Thing Swamp, hoping to spend his last moments in solitude. What follows is a complicated and compassionate tale, an example of the range of stories that comic books can tell, even with a living hunk of mulch at the center. Death of Doctor Strange, Bloodstone 1. Elsa Bloodstone has been around since the early 2000s, but she's only now getting a real push thanks to the Werewolf by Night special and the popularity of Marvel Snap. That push also includes a one-shot as part of last year's Death of Doctor Strange event. Despite the top billing for the Sorcerer Supreme, the story belongs to Elsa and her twisted family of monster hunters. It explores the complicated legacy of Elsa's family, including her brutish father Ulysses and her duplicitous brother Cullen, while also introducing her eldest sister Lyra. The story reveals Elsa to be more than the snarky killer who blows away any creature who stands in her way. It highlights her vulnerability, making her a much richer monster hunter. Start or expand your Marvel horror collection today at ebay.com. And now back to the show. Welcome back. So the moment that doesn't quite work for me in the color version is probably the moment that doesn't work for anyone over the black and white version. And that is the last shot of Elsa where she's holding the bloodstone. And in the black and white version, she's suddenly painted with color almost, and that sort of rolls over her and it reveals, and you have the somewhere over the rainbow, you have the connection to the Wizard of Oz and all that stuff, and it just works going from black and white to color in that moment. In the color version, obviously she's in color and she continues to stay in color as Somewhere Over the Rainbow plays. Did you find that moment in any way suffered, or was it just me?
I had forgotten all about it. I didn't know that I was missing anything.
Okay. So now,
so how did it feel then if you weren't expecting anything there? Did it just...
I felt like appropriately cathartic. Like, I mean, like I wasn't like, it didn't stick out to me as something weird. It just felt like, oh, this is what you do when you end the movie. Like, she's happy, so we're going to play the song. And then Ted and Jack are going to get sushi.
For me, my big problem with the special in general is the Ted and Jack talking about sushi. I felt that they didn't need that they stumbled. It became too Marvel quippy in a way that it hadn't really been up until that point. So I never loved that very ending. I was kind of hoping that it would go from color to black and white. That's what I was expecting, because I thought it would be like this, you know, on the one hand, Elsa's got her got the stone and she thinks she's done with the family. But on the other hand, especially those of us that know her from the comics, she's stuck back in this legacy. And I thought that the going to black and white would be a nice switch, that, you know, she got what she wanted, but now she's all the way back in the family, and it's she's got to deal with all of that. So I went into it watching that scene, expecting it to do this, and then being a little bit like, oh, and now we're going to the quips between Man-Thing and Werewolf. And so I was a little let down on that level.
See, I don't mind the, you know, the quick transition to the quips with Ted, but I feel you, Joe. Like, that is such a great final shot of Elsa. And we have already kind of summed up that the Werewolf by Night and, sorry, Jack Russell and Ted have, like, disappeared into the dawn or whatever. We don't really need to catch up with them. But it is just kind of, I guess, a fun way to end it. But I do prefer the more dramatic way of Elsa getting the Bloodstone, sort of contemplating the future. Speaking of the future, since this came out a year ago, no Werewolf by Night news, no Elsa Bloodstone news. Blade has been shoved back on the Marvel release calendar quite a few times now. Do we think we're getting any more of this now that Marvel is supposed to be paring down their plans for future products? Or is this just like, this is it and that's fine? It's okay if we don't get any more of this.
I mean, of course, it is okay that it would be something special if this is all that we got of these characters and it was perfect for the most part. You know, they haven't had a chance to make us hate them. And I do think it's good that Marvel is paring down from a quality level. I mean, I'm a glutton for this stuff, so I'll take as much as they give me, even if I'm complaining about it. But I understand they've got limited resources and they, you know, they can't throw every goofy character at the screen. That said, I hope that while they're trimming things down, they're going with the good stuff. And Werewolf by Night, these characters, these performances, Giacchino's direction, all of that's excellent. And so maybe let's run with that instead of, I don't know who to throw under the bus here, but instead of other, some of the more lackluster creators that they've, I'll say Michael Waldron, instead of giving Michael Waldron another gig, that one's for you. Instead of giving him another gig, maybe let's, I mean, I'm sure Giacchino is in demand with everything, but maybe let's see more of him. Maybe instead of doing, I liked Moon Knight more than most, but maybe instead of doing Moon Knight season two, bring Moon Knight in with Elsa and Werewolf, that they have connections in the comics. Maybe condense would be more of the way it goes, but I do hope we get them again. I think Brunell and Donnelly were just excellent embodying those characters, and I want to see more.
Do you care if you see any more Werewolf by Night, Alec?
I just disagree with basically everything Joe said, because I don't care. Like, I be frank, I don't care about any of this silly nonsense anymore. I'm at my wit's end. So I would probably rather not see another Werewolf by Night special, just because this one's good. And, like, I don't think we need to test the limits of that. But having said that, Joe's right. Like, Gael Garcia Bernal and Laura Donnelly are really good. And it, like, really, really engaging actors who are really, really engaging in both these roles. And then for a studio that is kind of invested in taking advantage of good actors who are good in their roles, it does seem a little silly to not roll them back again. So, like, I don't think we need another one. We probably won't get another one, but it would be a little bit of a shame if we don't get to see Bernal and Donnelly in these roles again in some capacity or another.
Whereas this color version has been coming out, Michael Giacchino has been doing a few interviews. He's been speaking about the future of Werewolf by Night. He doesn't know anything. He says that he and Kevin are friends, and so they talk all the time, but there's, as far as he knows, you know, it's up in the air. As for the color version of Werewolf by Night, he said that it was always planned as a thing that they were going to do, but after they finished the black and white version, and then they went back to see if they were going to go back and see if they could make one, and what it, were interested in what it would look like. But what happened was that they were tinkering with it, seeing what it might look like, and they ended up completing it before the black and white version came out. So it was always planned to come out later down the line. And I think that is worth a watch. If you're planning to watch Werewolf by Night again, check out the color version. If you're not planning to watch Werewolf by Night again, you're probably fine skipping it. I don't know whether you guys would agree with that, but it's the story that matters. And if you cared about that story the first time and you want to experience it again, give the color version a go and see what you think.
More holiday. We need the Guardians holiday was great. This is great. Even if they're not going to go back to these particular characters, you know, and the Blade movie is turning out to be kind of a debacle. It kind of sounds like. So maybe give us 30 minutes of Blade. You know, you got Mahershala Ali, you got Blade, a recognizable character. Make that the next Halloween special or any of them. I mean, Marvel and monsters go hand in hand. So how hard is it to make a Halloween special each year or to get other specials, another Christmas special, another actually do a proper holiday special that actually has other holidays that aren't Christmas. So my Jewish friends aren't bummed out by that bait and switch that happened to them. Anything like that would be great.
That's it for this episode of Marvel Standum. Make sure you're subscribing to us wherever you're watching or listening right now. Don't forget to check out our web home of denofgeek.com, where you can find all our Marvel coverage. You can also follow us at Den of Geek on Twitter and Den of Geek on Instagram. If you need more, all episodes of Marvel Standum are available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks once again to the sponsor of this episode, eBay. Be sure to check them out for all your Marvel-related collectibles. This has been Marvel Standum on the Den of Geek Network. Until next time, please be good to each other and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Marvel Standum, produced by Andrew Halley, Kirsten Howard, and Joe George. Hosted by Kirsten Howard. Editing and graphics by Andrew Halley. Social media coordinator, Lee Parham. Additional artwork by Chloe Lewis. Production assistant, Michael R. Music licensed from Soundstripe.com. Marvel Standum is a production of the Den of Geek Network. For more information, visit denofgeek.com.